everyone. It's Bianca, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Karthik and Uday, and we are 1 in 3 pre-meds. Today, we're going to start our pod talking about American healthcare system and the costs associated with healthcare here in this country. And some fun facts to start off our pod today. Did you know that the U.S. is ranked last overall in healthcare rankings when it comes to access to care, admin efficiency, equity, and healthcare outcomes? And the top in the world are countries like Norway, the Netherlands, and Australia. So before I give you some more fun facts about the cost of care, I'm going to ask my co-host if that's surprising to you or, you know, pretty much expected with how our system is run today?
Well, it certainly can't be surprising, can it? Everybody knows somebody who has that, like, that moment, right, where they went in for, I don't know, like, a test for strep, and then it cost them, like, you know, the price of a Beamer, right? Like, that's, like, not even an uncommon thing. American healthcare has been described in many different ways, but like predominantly is like a trash can fire. But yet, like, there's something very alluring about American healthcare, right? Like, people, there's no shortage of desire to proclaim it the best healthcare system for immigrants to come over and want to practice medicine in this country, for people to want to build interesting startups and companies and healthcare corporations around the commoditization of healthcare in this country as well. And perhaps that's part of the problem, but I think that there's definitely something special about the American healthcare system, even if that's special in like a particularly disagreeable way.
So let me throw another fact at you. So the U.S. today spends around 16% of its GDP on healthcare, higher than most other countries, almost all the countries, which spend around 9 to 10% on average of their GDP on healthcare. However, the U.S. ranks number 2 in care process, which basically means we have great preventative care, we have safe care, coordinated care, and engagement with patients, and overall patient preferences, which is also not surprising because I think it goes hand in hand, right? When you have more preferences, you have things like preventative care, it inherently is going to cost more.
Yeah, I guess it just makes you wonder where all that money is going, right?
Well, it's going into the pockets of my education. I'm just kidding. Maybe not. Maybe I'm not kidding. I guess I want to make a statement here is that I think the system is not just broken on the idea of what is healthcare and why is it expensive, but also why is it expensive to get into healthcare? So the point you're making, Uday, about, oh, you know, companies like to found here, people like to start corporations here, people like to bring their drugs to market first in the United States and in Europe, it's because we can afford to pay more for drugs. We can afford to pay more for services. I think it also comes down to the way that we train, personally, from speaking from personal experience, the way we train future healthcare providers here in the United States, it's all a debt-based system. So unlike a lot of PhD programs, for example, which are funded by the NIH or other government grants that allow people to train for free or for a reduced cost, most of the medical schools in the United States don't have a comprehensive no tuition policy, the one very famous exception being NYU recently. There are some others too that are offering free education in return for your attending their institution. But I think the important part here is that's not true in a lot of other countries. So we pay doctors more, we pay healthcare providers more, we pay more to hospitals because they're private entities. I think the whole thing is a sort of special American soup. And there's definitely a lot to talk about. And it's a huge field. There are a whole podcast dedicated just talking about the price of medical bills. So definitely a big topic for us to tackle today.
So part of the cost of care, in addition to the services that patients receive in the hospital and through routine appointments, prescription drugs are a huge cost to a patient's care. And we have a system where drugs are priced at competitive rates. And it's all these drug pricing policies, especially the one around drug transparency, is helping ideally to reduce the cost of drug prices. But if you know someone who has a chronic illness, acute illness, they probably have to spend tons of money on medications. And at that point, and if they can't afford it, it's a matter of choosing to live or not being afforded to.
It reminds me of that fable. It's like a story where there's this man in a village and he has a wife who's very sick, and someone in his village makes a drug, and that drug can save his life, the life of his wife, I should say. And basically the guy's like, okay, yeah, give me that drug. Like, I want that cure for my wife. And the guy says, well, yeah, but it's like 10 times more than you can afford, or it's like some crazy price. And the question is like a sort of like a moral dilemma is like, would you steal the drug? I think it's a really interesting application today, because it's like not like you're going to go rob a pharmacy to get some like monoclonal antibody treatment, right? Chronically for like 60 days. But the question being like, how do you price drugs in a way that's meaningful for life and how and reflects the value that it has for our healthcare system?
Yeah, that was my favorite Aesop's fable as well. I remember reading that as a third grader.
Yeah,
but
right.
Well, I was supposed to read it in first grade, but I'm a late bloomer. The whole thing, I think, points to what we're trying to like get chatty about, which is like value-based drug pricing, right? Like the like new age and potentially like, I don't know, it's happening in some very unique partnerships between biotech, biopharma companies and different PBMs or like payment systems, but it's not really like the most mainstream thing yet. But we're hoping that similar to like Green Day or Fall Out Boy, this does actually go mainstream eventually. And value-based drug pricing is exciting. Like one interesting example that we were cooking up and thinking about was Spark's Luxturna. Really interesting drug that essentially is like a gene therapy that is a one-time treatment for patients. And without going into like exactly what it does, it's, you know, good for the eyes, we'll say, just like carrots. But it's one of those things where it's like you could just take it once and potentially have this like binary healthcare outcome. And those kinds of things, I think, present a really solid ground for these like Aesop's fable type arguments, right? Of like, what is it worth for? What is like patient health, patient life, patient quality of life worth? And like, how does the American healthcare system, most specifically like the biopharmaceutical side, put a price tag on something like that? How do you do that?
And I think it's hard, because not to get too much into the payer stuff, because it's, you can't really penalize people who become sick for their illness. It's not like car insurance where you penalize the people who get into car accidents. So really interesting.
So when we talk about value-based care, what is that? What does that mean? Today it's defined as a contract that is essentially made between payers and manufacturers of drugs, pharma companies, and they mutually agree on a set of outcomes that reflect certain clinical economic benefits provided by that drug or therapy. And with a lot of data, mostly around clinical data, which is kind of the drawback of how traditional pricing is done today. They use all these data sources to identify thresholds, and the manufacturer, the pharma company, really only gets paid out the drug, and hence the patient really only pays for the drug through the insurance company if they meet that clinical or benefit that was set by those initial measures of outcomes. So essentially, you're really only paying, as a patient, you would be paying for your drug or therapy if it worked. So it's essentially bringing, it's value-based. It's, you're only paying for it if it brings the patient value, and those thresholds are predetermined. So, you know, there are other forms of innovative pricing like capitation, installment payments, and indication-specific pricing, but value-based contracting kind of hits a lot of the points where you are able to use real-world evidence, essentially, rather than just clinical data to identify the benefits and really like confirm the benefits. And payers love this, right? Because all these insurance companies are obviously want to ensure that the drugs they're going to be paying for or reimbursing are actually working and they're not just losing a lot of money. So the people that are kind of getting the short end of the stick here are the manufacturers, right? They take on that risk by putting their bets out there and saying that the drug and therapy is going to work.
I think we should zoom in really quickly based on Bianca's very solid explanation of how value-based pricing works And I actually use the Luxturna example. It's a really good explanation of like of this and how the manufacturers, how like biopharma companies and manufacturers are potentially taking on this quote unquote risk, right? Like it's really, it shouldn't be a risk because you should be able to storm into the board of directors meeting and be like, okay, like you would put your life behind these P2, P3 results, these phase two, phase three, like results, right? Like you actually do think your gene therapy works, right, guys? And they should be able to say yes. And then it should be a really easy process to convince everyone around them that they should go into value-based pricing. But just to like zoom in on Luxturna is a one-time gene therapy that was that is produced by Spark Therapeutics based out of Philadelphia. In 2018, they essentially made a proposal to CMS and pioneered this sort of like this whole proposal with Harvard Pilgrim to make Luxturna their drug available for people who have retinal dystrophy. And essentially, like, Luxturna would be administered to patients, and if treating physicians look at patient outcomes and say it's appropriate for them to, one, be they have the viable retinal cells, and two, they show some sort of clinical benefit and they're actually, like, being positively afflicted by the drug, then yeah, perfect, right? Like, pay out. And it, I think like it's exciting because it sort of takes away a little bit of the trad model of payment where it's like you're paying and the value that you're that's being conferred by the biopharma company is like implied. But now it shifts the burden of necessary benefit to the biopharma companies, which like, if anything, should play even better with like a highly capitalistic US healthcare system, right? Like you must add value if you would like dollars back.
And I think on this podcast, we've talked about totally other end of the spectrum kind of drugs, like cheap, generic, things like Docusate. And these are stool softeners, right? That don't really work, but somehow we're still paying out like $100 million a year as a like healthcare apparatus for these kinds of therapies. I wonder how many more of those are out there that will get killed off by the transfer to value-based drug pricing. And maybe there's a startup in here. I think I've said something like this before, but maybe there's a startup in here where you go and you find all the drugs that don't really work in clinical, everyday clinical practice. You find where people are wasting money and you sort of make a consultancy out of it. And with that consultancy, you say, hey, look, I'll come in and I'll find all the things that aren't working for you and save you this much money and you give me a cut of that many dollars. I think it's a good idea.
That is one side of the problem, right? Like it's like sort of like dealing with the less than ideal infrastructure that exists right now. But there's another side of things, which is like very much on the purchase now, pay later kind of thing, like Klarna, which is like the idea that potentially you need this like 1-2 million gene therapy right now. And you know, we're hoping that your insurance covers it, but for some, you know, insurance companies, you know, hopefully you're not listening to this podcast, but notoriously, like, don't tend to not cover things that you actually really need sometimes. And so potentially you might be able to, you know, build a startup around sort of like hedging or alleviating some of the initial payment of that and then having the payment go over time.
Put your Luxturna on layaway.
Your Luxturna on layaway. I'm sure that this is like a regulatory nightmare, because not to mention that if you were to build that company, you would essentially be building securities around like patients' binary health outcomes, but also like making like debt collateralizing it. I don't know what you would be doing, but it certainly won't look good in an Excel spreadsheet, I'm sure. But you know, if you somehow manage to make it look good, then you know, ring my line.
Hit up our 1 in 3 VC fund over here.
Yeah.
On the topic of insurance, which I know is a heavy topic, and to all our insurance listeners, would love to hear post-pod feedback. I've been hearing a lot of like case studies and stories of patients who, you know, have to get this drug, have to get the surgery, and insurance companies just won't pay it. And patients have to go through all these appeals process and literally have to read. It's not like they can't pay it. It's that they don't want to, obviously, because they don't want to reimburse anything. But under policy, and there's been so many situations where patients have had to read fine print, send an appeal, send letters, contact everyone they know, and eventually get their drugs or therapies paid for. And it's just so interesting the algorithms in which and processes in which insurance companies deem what is reimbursable versus not based on, yes, on policy, but also all these like minute factors of them just kind of like choosing to approve versus not. Other situations where insurance company, like employers that are providing insurances, they technically are self-funded plans, and you know, employers don't really have a lot of oversight over those plans. Like, you know, insurance companies can charge these employers all these random fees without them even knowing it. And there was a situation where there's this case study where this patient was getting a treatment, and it was like a continuous treatment that they would pay like $8 for a month. And that was, they were paying that for a couple of years. And all of a sudden it raised to $14 a month, their out of pocket fees. And they didn't really question it. They thought it was just, you know, some sort of like increase in price, but then they also realized their employer who was providing the insurance also was paying out for that, you know, treatment an additional like $30 than what they were initially paying. And no one really caught that until the patient like actually had to go in and ask about it. And then they found out that that extra cost and difference was actually getting funneled through like a third. So this insurance company had another company that they were using for this particular treatment, which they had to basically pay additional fees for, but weren't telling the employer nor the patient, and were charging like this extra like gap in the fund or the difference in the price to some dummy insurance code. And obviously there's a big lawsuit around it, and they were exposed, but like this probably happens a lot. Like there's so many cases where there are dummy insurance codes and we just don't know about it.
I'm actually speechless. I need a minute. This is like...
I was actually... The whole thing I was doing is that this... the first part of what you're saying would roll smoothly into bill of the month. This reminds me of what my dad likes to say, which is that like ever since he became of age to get a colonoscopy, he says like no matter what he's going into the doctor for, he's like, yeah, I'm going in for like a checkup, and also like they're going to bill me for my colonoscopy. Like it's like no matter how you like end up going to the doctor, like the insurance company makes sure that you end up getting a colonoscopy out of it. You get cleaned out.
That's funny. I wish I could laugh more, but it's just so insane that the point that you're making, Bianca, it's so good, is that the $6 a month, 14 minus 8, and an extra $30 here, like it's not a lot when you think about individual costs, but multiplied by tens of thousands of patients, multiplied by, you know, tens of billing codes across 15 or 20 companies, it ends up being this huge chunk of our healthcare spending that no one is accounting for. I think we all know this intuitively, that billing is a bane of our existence, and picking out pricing based on the literal things that you've done is really expensive, and sort of not expensive because it's literally expensive, but expensive because it's administratively difficult and laborious. I wonder if, and I know that there are things out there, there are places that talk about this, like the story that you're talking about, but at greater length, right? Like I've heard of some podcasts and some news segments that talk about this.
Yeah, I mean, we did a whole nother thing on like the actual issues with like the administration of healthcare that sort of intersects with billing or causes billing issues or plays off of billing issues as well. So there's no lack of things to speak about in that area. Starting with first and foremost, like obviously how like healthcare records work is like the worst thing for billing right now. And like every single standard that they build to sort of bridge that gap, they just build a new one and they're all not really solving the problem. But regardless, I digress.
I want to, before we, you know, send our listeners off to talk about bill of the month and an arm and a leg, I want to share a recent healthcare cost I had. And maybe we can use it as a segue for a fun segment that I have planned. So first, I'll tell a story. So I inflamed my biceps tendon, which attaches, the head of it attaches to your rotator cuff.
Lift, you know, too much, messed bro? Up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just lift way too much, bro.
He can't stop picking up heavy things and putting them back down.
Putting them down. You know what? The ortho lady, she was so nice. I'm sitting there. I'm like a skinny guy. I'm not particularly fit. And she's like, oh, you probably lift a ton of weights, man. And I was like, this is nuts. This is like 5-star service. She's here just to gas me up. And then I figured why she was gassing me up so much was the bill. So let's get to the bill. So here's what I did. I went in, I got an x-ray for my shoulder, which clearly wasn't broken. I don't know why I needed the x-ray, but I got an x-ray. And then I saw this orthopedic doctor. And then I went to PT. So I went to physical therapy, one session of it. I stopped going to PT because I saw the bills. So let's talk this through. The actual cost of the x-ray, $38, of which my insurance somehow had like a $7 discount. I paid $31. The cost to read the x-ray, $396 to read a normal shoulder x-ray.
Wow.
It was nuts. My mom, who also works in healthcare, looked at it and instantly was like, you got swindled. And anyway, I went to physical therapy. And here's the crazy thing. In physical therapy, they charged me for the guy telling me what exercise to do. And they charged $400 an exercise. Now, the exercise isn't literally something he did. It was an idea that he told me about. He was like, okay, so do this thing to improve your shoulder, do that thing. And it literally is itemized like complex shoulder physical therapy knowledge times three. Nice. And like, that's what I got billed for. And then my insurance gets like a discount off of it. And over out of the whole thing, obviously I haven't hit my deductible yet this year. I'm relatively healthy, thankfully. I paid like $1,000 total for everything. And then I was like, screw this. I'm going to YouTube physical therapy or something. You know, like I instantly had this reaction where I was like, I don't want to necessarily go back. I don't want to pay this money. And I think it brings like an interesting question is for like, when you have chronic conditions and you hit your out-of-pocket maximum in network, you're talking about very different healthcare expenditures than when you might be younger. You have essentially like no healthcare expenditures for most of your life, except for the rare occasion that you have something go wrong. You know, you trip and fall, you break an arm, and you have to go to the doctor. And so I thought what a fun exercise for us could be is to go and pretend to everybody right now that you trip, you fall, you hit your head, and you need to get stitches. And we'll simplify this. The first question would be like, do you even know if you need to get stitches? Let's just say you're for sure, it looks bad. You need to go to some sort of service and get stitches. You have 5 minutes before your significant other, before your friend, your roommate, like drags you down to the car, puts you in the car and drives you to whatever site you've chosen to go and get your laceration, let's say, taken care of. And I'm going to give a little prelude to this. The laceration is small. Let's say it's like 2 inches across your head, right? It's relatively small, and that's important.
I think also really quickly before we hop into this exercise, I think it's like interesting that you said you went to YouTube to get like the like is our physical therapists, if you're a physical therapist, contact us. I want to hear if you're worried about YouTube taking your job, right? Like because like obviously there's an entire segment of people and like, you know, they're called boomers. They're going to come to you. But like, you got that locked down. But I think there's a ton of people. I would do the same thing, right? It's like, if they told me a couple exercises and then they like basically billed me the cost of like a PS5, I would go home and be like,
two PS5s. Yeah. I could have gotten two PS5s. For
two PS5s. Yeah. I would just like immediately go on YouTube and be like, in fact, to go exactly to what you're talking about with stitches, I would literally Google first thing, like, I've smashed my whole face in with a pan. Do I need stitches? And then the next thing is like, I would just like master Google, take the wheel, right? Like where it would probably route me to, it would like give me suggestions of like where to go get stitches or if I need stitches, but regardless.
Right. So, okay, let's actually do the exercise now. So here's the task. I'm going to lay it out really strictly. Maybe our producer can do this too on his end. He's silent. He's in the background. His name is Troy. We never mentioned that, but I just want to call him out here. He might cut this at the end, so I won't even get to say it. He's sort of all powerful. Okay, anyway, fine. But basically, everyone do this exercise. You need stitches. The cut is, I'm going to say 4 centimeters. That's important. Okay, I want that to be important because it's gonna come up at the end. It's 4 centimeters and it's on your forehead. Go right now and find the cheapest place near you for your insurance, or if you don't have insurance, whatever your way of paying for this, the way to get stitches for a 4 centimeter laceration on your forehead.
I'm going to do this exercise, but see, that's a trick question because no one ever tells you how much these things cost.
It's true.
Wait, that's what you say. That's what you say now. Okay, we'll find out. I think you might be able to figure it out.
What time of day is it? Does that matter?
So right now?
Let's say it's right now, wherever you are.
Well, then I got to go to urgent care.
It's too late. Yeah, I think I might also have to go to urgent care. It's also very telling that when you type in where can I get stitches near me, one of the auto completes is without insurance.
Yeah.
Right.
See, most of these places will not tell you. Oh, I lied. I found a chart. A nifty chart with urgent care centers and the cost of stitches.
That's helpful, huh?
Okay, so my city MD, out of pocket, without insurance, I guess, it looks like, is $200.
That's not bad.
I still don't know where I'm going.
So, but did they say what kind of stitches that's for?
I didn't even know there were multiple kinds.
Okay, good. Okay, so here's the next question. Yeah. So that's why I said it's 4 centimeters and on your face. Our producer is putting in our chat, he's getting 165 to 415 is his range.
I think we're reading the same article.
Are liquid stitches real?
Yeah. No,
they're a fantasy. No,
really?
They're real.
They're like liquid band-aids. There's liquid band-aids.
All right. It's not just like military tech from Transformers. It's like real stuff, huh?
What did you get today? Did you get a cost here?
I cannot find a spot to go. I found 3 different spots, but no costs.
Okay, let's call time. Let's call time and now say you're just going to go to the closest urgent care. And I'm going to walk us through what I did in the 20 minutes of prep I did for this. So I had more time. I will note this is all different because when you actually have stitches, you know, you're actually bleeding from your face. It hurts. You're covering this. The face bleeds a lot. It's very vascularized. So you're holding something up, trying to keep the blood out of your face. You're working with like maybe one hand on a computer. If you're lucky, you have someone else looking. First time, you're kind of scared. Maybe you're hurt. You're in pain. There's no way you're going to be thinking like us sitting here at the computer with all these resources, with all this time to banter it back and forth. And, you know, I would also like to say we're relatively familiar with healthcare. So we maybe did some interesting things. The first thing I want to say is, so suppose you go and you go on something called fairhealthconsumer.org. This is a website designed to tell you the cost of different procedures on average, right? And you go and find the cost of getting a 4 centimeter set of stitches repaired on your face. I want everyone to go try and do that. And we'll report back in a second. So that's the first bit. So go on there and see if you can find the cost to get a 4 centimeter set of stitches repaired on your face or a 4 centimeter laceration. Okay, so I'll cut ahead. How are you guys doing? Did you guys find the CPT code that you need to use to get stitches?
No.
Nope. No. Okay, I'll tell you the reason you can't is because it doesn't exist on here. So I chose my situation very particularly as 4 centimeters on the face. So the way wound care works for these kinds of things is it's repair of wound. So if you search repair of wound, you might get closer. So if you go to urgent care costs and then type in repair of wound, you'll get all these options. Right. And the options will sort of like push you towards all these different ways in which your wound can be closed. And eventually, like you'll find this one that's like, okay, code 12052. So it's a CPT code, repair of wound, 2.6 to 5 centimeters of the face, ears, eyelids, nose, lips, and or mouth. So we click that, we click get your cost. And then around me, it's $1,000 if you're out of network or uninsured. But here's the thing, it doesn't actually tell you where to get it. It just says like, oh, like this is what we have for around you. You like can click like see details. You can try and find more, but it doesn't actually tell you where to go get it. And the other thing is you can't actually navigate to repair of wound easily because if you go to urgent care and then try to search through this menu, the UI is so bad that you actually can't find 2.6 to 5 centimeters. You can only find 2.5 centimeters or less for the face, ears, eyes, nose, so on and so forth. So first of all, really tough to find. Second, it's super expensive, like $1,000. Like, that's all my physical therapy.
What is it? Sorry, is that out or in network?
That's out of network, uninsured price. And so now you're asking a great question. What if we go in network? What if you're lucky enough to have health insurance, you stay in network, and then you go and do the same thing? So in network, the cost can be like super high. It can be like just as high. In fact, I wasn't able to find somewhere in network for myself here where I live. And then the cost is like $1,500. I'll say the final piece here is that's not actually how wound closure works. Because what this is talking about is one particular service. It's talking about repair of the wound. But when you go to one of these facilities, you actually have to pay for, you know, suppose you fell off your dirt bike and you have like rocks and dirt in there and they have to clean it out. Suppose they give you some supplies to keep your wound clean. They give you antibiotics. All these things are going to be billed as a sort of package for your visit. And there's no way you can know what is going to be billed because it's not known ahead of time until you get to the hospital and the doctor takes care of you. And 3 weeks later, somebody goes through your chart and does medical billing. And so actually, Bianca, it was awesome that you found something that was like $200 at CityMD. That's really straightforward. My only question is like, if we went in and actually tried to get stitches, would we only pay that much or would we pay something different? Because we actually need other things than what we think we need. And what if you don't need stitches at all? What if you go there and the doctor just sends you home with a gauze bandage, right? How much are you out then for the cost of the doctor? These are just the costs for the actual services. It's not clear if these are the costs for other things that are bundled with your care as well. So my point from all of this exercise was, sure, like finding healthcare prices and the cost of healthcare is difficult, but given the actual constraints of the time frame when you need to find healthcare for a lot of people in our generation, it's nearly impossible to actually find good info on where and how to get quality healthcare. And I think that's the big issue with any sort of system that pretends to be a free and open market.
Totally agree. In fact, I would go so far as to say this is the whole pitch for YouTube MD here, right? Like, like first things first, you're like YouTubing like how to do my own stitches after you look up something like this. Not to mention the door hits you on the way out because you have to go back and pay to get your stitches removed.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, kind of got me like scared. Now I got to think about where I would go.
I know. I have a surgery in my foot, and I called when we were during open enrollment because I was like, I'm going to put aside money in my FSA so that I could cover my deductible and out of pocket, whatever, however much the surgery is going to cost. And the billing person at my hospital, it's an IDN in New York, they were like, oh, we can't tell you that until like a couple weeks before your surgery. I'm like, what? What do you mean? Like, can you just give me a ballpark? And she's like, well, no, like insurance companies like negotiate, you know, prices and it changes every year. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not changing my insurance plan. Like everything's going to be the same. I just need a rough ballpark. And they're like, yeah, I can't even tell you like a number. I'm like, what? And they're like, oh yeah, you know, your surgery is going to be covered by insurance, but there's like this hospital fee that is not covered by your insurance. You're gonna have to pay that out of pocket. Like,
it's insane. It's so insanely structured because what do our insurances actually cover? We're paying all this money, and not to dog on insurance companies. I'm sure some of our listeners work for them. Some of them are them. If you're Mr. Aetna listening to Hawaii,
yeah,
hey, hey, Mr. Aetna, what, you know,
my heart goes out to you, Mrs. Delta Dental. Please hit me up.
Hey there, Delilah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Hey There, Delta Dental is like an insane song that we could probably write as our cover music. But I think overall, it's nuts because like I'll never go to PT ever again. And I think that's why we talk about Americans not having trust in healthcare. This is why.
Yeah.
All right. Hear me out. Full YouTube library series. We hire like 4 PTs, right? Soul cycle style rotation. Everyone gets hooked on their personalities and we just run them through like an insane loop of YouTube videos where you basically just like we tag all the YouTube videos with like what body part hurts and then like boom, it's like we're writing audiobooks, but it's just like we just have PTs on staff. We just get them to record like 150 videos, put it up as a library on one YouTube channel, ad monetize it by using like all of those like, you know, lame not copyright soundtracks, and then boom, we're like in business.
It's even worse because so like I have access to up to date. I literally went on there and searched, you know, based on my condition. Obviously, orthopedics has all of these documents and I printed the patient pages and I was like, there you go. I just served myself.
That's awesome.
Like I now know the exercises that I need to do that the PT didn't even print out for me. He didn't even print them. So I don't like I can only remember them. Right.
How does that work with like, you know,
He was going to give them to me on like a CD-ROM or like a floppy disk.
That's awesome.
Yeah, give them the flop. Yeah, how does that work for less mentally dexterous patients, right? Just like send them home with like a couple
exactly.
words of advice.
Well, you just build the crap out of them. You just build them until they go bankrupt. And well, this is like only one of their issues.
I'm realizing that's a feature, not a bug, right? Like what they've done is essentially given you enough to go home and think about so you come back the next time.
It's a teaser.
Right? You know why you need my YouTube channel that I'm about to build? Because this guy only told you the first 3 exercises. But
yes.
I'll show you on my YouTube channel that there are actually 9. There's 6 more that you missed out on.
No, he said there was a whole series of 25 exercises that I could work through as I got better.
Dude.
I printed out all 25. Why, you know, and the whole point here, obviously, this is not medical, legal, financial, tax advice.
So especially not physical therapy advice.
Yeah, in no way, shape, or form physical therapy advice. I have some friends who are physical therapists, love them. They do amazing work. This is not about PT. It's just about my experience with the healthcare system and how, for me personally, this service didn't work. And it essentially cost me a ton of money that I don't necessarily want to spend as a medical student to do something that like wasn't super bothering me. My shoulder was injured. I needed to get some work done on it, but now it's better and I don't have any incentive to go back. And I think like applying that model to all things in healthcare, whether it's diabetes or hypertension, that's how we reduce the cost of American healthcare, by allowing people to go get basic preventative care for a low price, instead of then turning around and billing for the vascular surgeon to treat a cold limb because this diabetic hasn't had any preventative care for 15 years and their average resting fasting blood sugar is 315, you know, and their A1C is like 12.
You know, this is also one of those like pull the readers moment, because $400, while it is expensive for maybe like where we're sitting right now, if you're a PT, like let us know. Maybe that's cheap, right? Because I'm sure and gas, like if you're an MD, you're probably slamming like thousands of dollars on bills, right? Like I'm sure a colonoscopy's got to be well over 1-2K, right? Colonoscopy being the only medical procedure that I ever benchmark on or care about. But if maybe $400 is, maybe you're nothing. Getting like a
maybe
deal.
Maybe I got a steal of a deal.
Maybe you're getting a steal. Yeah.
If we have any listeners who have any particular opinions on this topic, please hit us up, because very curious to hear perspectives here.
Please. Especially if you're a PT.
If you're a PT looking to start a YouTube channel, hit me up, because I need to know that exercises 21 through 25. I ran out of printer ink.
Dude.
We'll give you free ad space.
I think this YouTube channel could be awesome, by the way. Imagine if it was like Peloton style and you like tuned in to see your favorite PT.
Like, or like the mirror. You know,
ooh, like the mirror.
Mirror for PT.
Yeah, well, I don't want to get into hardware. I want to get into YouTube channels, but, you know.
Fair.
We should do fun facts. Let's lighten the mood here.
Let's
play the jingle.
Facts.
Cue the jingle.
Yeah, play the jingle. Let's go.
We don't have a jingle. That's the only problem. Okay.
Start singing.
I want to just say one that's easy. It's an easy transition. I found the most expensive price I could find for the CPT codes I was talking about was a hospital near me that was charging $21,000 for care of a laceration 2.6 to 7 centimeters on your face. $21,000. That's like a new Honda. I don't know. Must be like a car. Must buy a car, like at the very least, right? That's like a car.
Is that because plastics is involved then too? Or
I don't know. Look, I don't have no idea. I think that was the cash price, and it's this whole thing about transparency and like what your cash price is, which people negotiate. I think it's like that whole boundary that they're setting up for themselves. But yeah, it was a small private hospital near me. It was actually a mental health institution near me that was charging $21,000 for this. So I don't know why that is. I don't know what the reasoning is. And I don't know what's going on there, but also an invitation to our listeners. Fun fact, if you can find the most ridiculous pricing on a CPT code, email it into us, tag us, add us, do something to us to tell us about what it is, because I'm interested to know.
Yeah, definitely do something to us. I'll go to mine. So I was recently informed that when you take your pet to the vet, they actually have to sort of like, they have to store some data about your pet, right? They have to like open up a medical record. And I just thought this was really sweet. This is a little bit of heartwarming fact for you. But when you like take your cat in, they make the medical record. The first name is the cat's name and the last name is your last name. I think that's so sweet. Obviously, like pet owners are just like, obviously that makes a lot of sense. Like they're a part of the family or whatever. But I just love that in like the documentation, it says the cat's first name and then it's like your last name. It's literally the cat's full name. I enjoy that a lot. So I'll stop there.
What do they, have like a cat's birthday? Like what do they put on there?
So they ask
like for
you to,
age and stuff.
It's a really good question. They actually ask you to estimate your cat's birthday. And they also obviously ask for like previous history and like vaccination records and stuff like that. But they also try to put down like a physical description of the cat, which I find, I'm mostly blown away by the idea that like there's a bunch of electronic records of just like, you know, like Fluffy Suresh or something like that, right? Just like, it's just awesome.
I wonder what cats pay for wound care. Our next episode.
What's the next?
That'd be crazy. What if you went to a vet? I'm like almost animal. Maybe I should go to the vet instead. I bet it's not that expensive at the vet.
Okay, my fun fact isn't that fun, but it's very relevant to our pod topic. More than 60% of Americans deplete their savings to pay off medical debt, which is a pretty high number. Like nearly more than half of Americans dip into their savings, deplete all of their savings to pay off medical debt. It's a lot of people. And do you have a comment on that?
No, I'm just shocked. That's a huge number. I mean, I knew it was high. I didn't realize it was like more than one in two.
That's so high. Yeah.
I'll end us off with a funner fact regarding chocolate. Chocolate is good for your skin. It improves the antioxidants in chocolate, improve your blood flow and protect against UV damage. So eat more chocolate.
Is that a randomized controlled trial? Are they still accepting patients? What does the placebo arm look like? I have a couple of questions.
We'll send you the study after.
Okay, great. I think with that, that's the pod. Thanks for tuning in today to listen to us talk about healthcare and healthcare costs in particular. It's an immense topic. It's hard to cover. I think we just scratched the surface. I think anyone can only scratch the surface about the cost of healthcare. In the future, I think we're going to talk a lot more about value-based care and the ways in which different services help perpetuate that new model of paying for healthcare in this country and what we can do to help that out. I think we're all proponents of value-based care here. So if you have thoughts or comments on the podcast, add us, comment, tag, and we'll see you on the next one. Take care.